Let's not begin with violence. Let's not even begin with hatred. Those are the loud consequences, the explosions we point to when it's already too late. Instead, let's start with something quieter. The way someone rolls their eyes when a certain name is mentioned. The pause before shaking a hand. The way a headline reduces a person to a single word that makes you forget they have a family, a history, a face. It doesn't feel like an act of violence. It feels like ordinary speech, ordinary reaction. But that ordinariness is exactly what makes it dangerous. Dehumanization doesn't always enter the room wearing boots. It slips in on the back of language, a label, a slur, a stereotype that pretends to explain everything in one stroke. Parasite, criminal, waste of resources. Each word pulls away a layer of personhood until nothing remains but a hollow outline. And the strange part is how easily we nod along, how often we repeat these words without noticing their weight. That is the first step, not hatred, but agreement disguised as description. Think about the last time you overheard a joke you didn't laugh at. Maybe it was about immigrants, or about people on welfare, or about someone's religion. You felt the sting, but you also felt the pressure of the room. To laugh would make you complicit. To stay silent would make you conspicuous. So maybe you smirked. Maybe you looked away. Maybe you said nothing at all. That silence is part of the mechanism, because in that moment, what could have been resisted becomes normalized. The joke survives, and so does the frame it carries. This is where it begins, not at the massacre, not at the battlefield, not in the camp. It begins in the invisible space between us, where metaphors, headlines, and careless comments gather. It begins with the way people are spoken about, until the speaking itself becomes a form of erasure. You don't have to point a weapon to participate. You only have to agree that certain people are less than you, less deserving, less complex, less human. And once that agreement takes root, it doesn't take much for action to follow. Because to harm another person, you must first unsee them as a person. You must dim the light behind their eyes until you can tell yourself there is nothing sacred there. You must let yourself believe, if only for a moment, that they are something else, an obstacle, a problem, a burden. And the moment you cross that line in your mind, you have already prepared the ground for what comes next. It doesn't matter if you never lift a hand yourself. The permission has already been granted, the soil already tilled. Someone else will always be willing to harvest what you have planted. The danger of dehumanization is how natural it feels. No one wakes up one morning and decides to erase another person's dignity. It happens in increments, in small permissions we give ourselves every single day. We stop making eye contact with the homeless man on the corner. We talk about those people as if they are a single mass with no difference between them. We measure lives in numbers, in statistics, in costs, until the face disappears. And because these steps feel ordinary, even rational, they slip past our defenses. By the time we recognize them as dehumanization, the habits have already hardened. My name is Andre Barburas. I've spent years studying the undercurrents of power, identity, and culture. Not as an outsider pointing fingers at others, but as someone who has seen how easily any of us can cross that invisible line. Because I've crossed it too, in moments of frustration, judgment, or thoughtless speech. This is not a course about villains in uniforms. It's about the ordinary human tendency to divide the world into us and them. It's about noticing how the first step is taken not by monsters, but by neighbors, colleagues, friends, by people like us. I don't stand above this topic as if untouched by it. I stand inside it, like you do, aware of how fragile empathy can be when fear or convenience takes over. That's why I'm here. Not to lecture, but to map out the terrain we all walk on without realizing. Because if we can't see the ground beneath us, we can't recognize when it begins to tilt. And history shows us that once the tilt starts, the slide can be fast, brutal, and devastating. Dehumanization is the first step toward anything. Toward cruelty, yes. Toward violence, certainly. But also toward neglect, toward silence, toward looking away. It's not just about the horrors of war or genocide. It's about the quieter decisions we make when we convince ourselves that someone else doesn't deserve our time, our care, or our concern. Every atrocity begins with that smaller dismissal. Every great harm grows from the seed of indifference. It rarely announces itself with trumpets. It doesn't arrive shouting in slogans or uniforms at first. It arrives disguised as practicality, as common sense, as the tired justification of "that's just how the world works." And in that disguise, it is hardest to resist. Because who wants to argue against what everyone else seems to agree on? Who wants to be the one who disrupts the joke, the label, the easy categorization? History is filled with examples of where this path leads, but history also dulls the shock. We grow accustomed to the grainy black and white photos, the museum exhibits, the textbooks that present cruelty as something finished, sealed away. We trick ourselves into believing it happened then, to people over there. We forget that the same mechanics live here, now, in the words we speak and the systems we build. The past isn't past. It is rehearsal, waiting for the next performance. Because it is happening here. Not in the exact same forms, but in echoes we can recognize if we pay attention. In the way migrants are reduced to statistics. In the way political opponents are framed as existential threats rather than fellow citizens. In the way strangers online are stripped of complexity and turned into caricatures. Every society builds its ladder of who matters more and who matters less. The only difference is where we place ourselves on the rungs. The ladder itself, though, is always shifting. One decade, it is religion. Another decade, it is race. Another, it is ideology, nationality, class. The categories change, but the logic does not. Some people are worth more than others. And the higher we climb, the easier it becomes to press down on the shoulders beneath us. That pressure isn't only vertical, it ripples sideways, convincing us that if others suffer, it must be because they deserve it. But ladders are unstable things. They tilt when fear rises. They wobble when resources feel scarce. And then when they tip too far, those who once stood on higher rungs suddenly find themselves scrambling to prove they still belong. That is how fragile status becomes when it depends on devaluing others. No one is safe from being pushed down when the system itself runs on exclusion. And yet, every journey down this path begins the same way. Not with blood spilled, not with violence openly declared, but with something smaller, easier to miss. A joke passed off as harmless. A word spoken without thought. A headline that turns lives into numbers. These are the quiet beginnings of something vast. And to understand how we get to the unthinkable, we must start by noticing the things we are trained to overlook. Think about how quickly we grow used to labels. At first, they feel like exaggerations. We wince a little when we hear them. But after enough repetition, they start to sound normal. They save us the trouble of nuance. They make the world simpler, cleaner, easier to categorize. And in that simplicity, we lose something essential, the ability to see people as more than the names they've been given. Once someone has been reduced to a label, their story becomes irrelevant. Their history doesn't matter. Their family doesn't matter. Their pain does not matter. We don't ask how they got here. We don't wonder what they dream about. We tell ourselves the label is all we need to know. And in that shortcut, empathy is erased. Dehumanization is efficient. That's part of its appeal. It trims away complexity, leaving only caricature. It tells us who deserves protection and who doesn't, who deserves freedom and who can be controlled, who deserves life and who can be sacrificed. It is the ruthless logic of division, dressed up as clarity. And yet, it never begins with clarity. It begins with a joke, with a shrug, with a metaphor repeated often enough that it becomes common sense. It doesn't feel like the beginning of anything significant. That's why it works. Because if we recognize the first step as the first step, we might refuse to take it. Consider how language travels. One politician uses a phrase. It spreads to talk shows, then to headlines, then to casual conversations at dinner tables. Soon, the phrase feels natural, almost inevitable. But each repetition sharpens it, until the words cut deeper than we realize. By the time we notice, it has already shaped how thousands of people see the world. We like to believe we are immune to this, that we're too thoughtful, too independent, too compassionate to be fooled by dehumanizing language. But the truth is, none of us are beyond its reach. It works because it appeals to something inside us, the need for certainty, the desire for belonging, the relief of not having to wrestle with complexity. It offers an easy answer, and in hard times, easy answers are seductive. The problem is that easy answers don't stay small. They scale, they replicate. What begins as one comment becomes policy. What begins as policy becomes practice. What begins as practice becomes culture. And once culture has absorbed it, resistance feels almost impossible. That is the hidden danger of the first step. It doesn't feel like a step at all. It feels like standing still, like going along with the flow, like doing nothing. But doing nothing is itself a choice. And when enough people make that choice, the silence becomes permission. Silence doesn't mean neutrality. It means agreement. It means consent to the narrative that others are less than human. It means giving power to the loudest voices in the room. And history has shown us, again and again, what those loudest voices are willing to do once they believe no one will stop them. But the story of dehumanization is not only about history. It is about us, here, now. It is about the names we use without thinking, the jokes we let pass, the headlines we don't question. Each one is small on its own, but together they form a climate, an atmosphere in which cruelty can actually breathe. And once that atmosphere thickens, it becomes the air everyone inhales. The scariest part is how normal it feels from the inside. People living through it rarely think, hey, we are dehumanizing others. They think we are protecting ourselves. They think we are being realistic. They think this is just how things are. And it's only later, sometimes much later, that the consequences reveal themselves in full. If you study the moments before violence, you will always find the same seeds. Not just anger, not just fear, but language, the words that paved the way, the justifications rehearsed in public long before they were acted on in private, the steady erosion of empathy until the unthinkable becomes thinkable. This is why I call dehumanization the first step toward anything. It doesn't determine what will happen, but it makes almost anything possible. It opens the door to violence, yes, but also to exclusion, exploitation, neglect. Once someone has been defined as less than human, there are no limits to how they can be treated. and that absence of limits is what makes the process so dangerous. To resist dehumanization, we must first be willing to notice it, not just when it's blatant, but when it's subtle, not just when it's shouted, but when it's whispered, not just when it's used by those we already mistrust, but when it comes from our own mouths. Awareness is not enough to stop it, but it is the beginning of resistance, because you cannot fight what you refuse to name. So this is where we begin. Not with the horrors that follow, but with the quiet beginnings, the thresholds we cross without realizing. We begin with the ordinary, the invisible, the overlooked, because only by paying attention to the first step can we understand how the journey unfolds, and only by naming it now can we hope to stop what might come next.